Red Ice members, thank you very much for tuning in. We are, of course, talking with Todd Campbell from Through the Looking Glass. We are talking about all things esoteric and occult in relation to news in the media and events around the world. And I want to talk a little bit about an area that has to do with the terrorist attacks. We talked, of course, about 9/11 right at the beginning of the first segment, but we had another terrorist attack back in November, the Mumbai attacks. And I know that this is something that Todd has been writing about also, and tying it in with the very, very interesting areas that again seem, you know, seemingly unconnected, but once you get into it, there is definitely a thread running through all of that. And it has to do with things like the moon, or what has been known as the wolf moon that we had back in January. And then we can tie this in possibly with the trident symbolism and even helter skelter as we go along. But I'd like to ask you, Todd, the interest, it seems to be, like in terrorist attacks, everyone's radar, so to speak, are always honing in on something like a terrorist attacks. Again, it's a big event, and many people are looking at it. In regards to the Mumbai attacks, what did you find interesting, or I should say maybe disturbing in this case? Was there something that really kind of caught your attention on this one as well?
Well, certainly. I did spend a fair amount of time after the fact researching it, as did a number of other people. I think there was a lot of great, really, really amazing research done on that particular event. And obviously, you know, that goes back to what we were talking about in the first hour about 9/11. So, you know, any of these kind of situations now, I think we as researchers are much more armed and prepared to look at these things now when they happen. And so, as you know, they're obviously super high profile to begin with, but we've, in a way, caught up to the curve after 9/11. We've all done our homework, and so now we're able to look at these things through the looking glass, or with a more critical eye, if you will.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Mumbai really sent red flags screaming, you know, almost instantaneously for me when it went down. A couple of summers, I guess it was about summer of 2007, I guess, I started kind of writing various posts that were really just covering things that were happening in the news. At the time, there were a number of mining accidents, bridge collapses.
Mm-hmm.
There were a number of earthquakes that were happening simultaneously with these events, and based on the kind of the earthquake as a trigger was kind of how I was approaching it.
Mm-hmm.
And based from that, the idea of the earthquake took me to Poseidon. And so I started referring to these things as trident alerts. Because Poseidon rules over earthquakes, and, you know, we're known to see him holding the trident.
Yes.
And so I would label these pockets of events as trident alerts. Well, when the Mumbai incident took place, one of the main locations was the Trident Hotel in Mumbai.
Yeah.
And so I immediately, that, you know, I was like, oh, okay, what's going on here? And then once you start to look at the Hindu religion and the culture of that area, you realize that Shiva is associated with the trident. So, you know, you substitute one god for another, if you will, quite frankly.
Yes.
And that story is just started to look laden with these bizarre synchronicities that for me personally, you know, went back to my original Trident work. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, other writers were picking up on various other aspects of the thing. And so for me, it started to look like, okay, well, that signals something to me personally, resonates with me personally. And so I start to look at the event itself and go, okay, are we looking at another, like, false flag terrorist type event? And when you look at, so, you know, immediately you have to think about 9/11. Well, you look at the construction of the Twin Towers, the exterior design of those buildings were a three-pronged trident body design of the exterior of those towers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there's a really great photograph that a woman took. I can't even remember the year that she took it, but it's a really amazing photograph of that architectural design of this trident exterior of the Twin Towers.
Hmm.
And they've even gone so far that pieces of the inner framework that were jutting out from the Ground Zero site were taken away and placed in a airport hangar at JFK Airport. And they are a trident design. They've even specifically said that they are a trident, they're in a trident formation, and that that piece of the Twin Towers is going to be put on permanent display as a memorial at the, you know, the whatever they're calling that replacement building for the Twin Towers.
Yeah, the Freedom
as a memorial.
Tower.
Right, the Freedom Tower. And that, you know, that the article that I cited that explains all that, you know, they're saying that it will stand as a trident, you know, this memorial trident. And so it's just all this, you know, and so that all kind of connected the two events. And if one is to believe that 9/11 was an inside job and that it was set up, that connection of the trident to me, referring back to Mumbai, suggests to me that perhaps that particular terrorist event was a false flag created situation.
Yes. I'm looking at the picture here as well of what you were describing earlier, and first that came to mind because I know that I saw it a while back was, of course, it looked like tuning forks, and then I go into the actual photo itself and actually says VTC tuning forks windows. So it's almost like a giant, should put it, a receptor for the, you know, the cosmic song, as it were. You know, this is a building that is resonating with the, you know, with the energies of everything. You know, in a way, there's a giant tuning fork. It's a really interesting picture, actually.
Yeah, I know that. I think Steve Wilner is picked up on the tuning fork idea, and you know, not only can you see it in the design of the individual buildings themselves, but if you look at the buildings as they stood together, they form almost the identical thing combined. As
yes.
You know, and so, yeah, there's definitely something interesting to that in terms of some sort of resonator, no doubt.
And then we had, you know, because again, we can even tie this together with the moon in some interesting way. I know that India they've been recently planning another moon mission, and the moon has been coming up in various contexts after that point. One thing being this wolf moon that you wrote about, which was really, really interesting. And this is basically that the moon was, I guess, at that point in January, at the closest to the Earth, so it would be very large, I think, or very prominent in the sky at that point. I think, is that correct, Todd?
Yes, that is correct. I think it was January 12th or something. We had what was known as what they called the Wolf Moon. And that all does kind of relate back to things that were going on during the Mumbai phase event. And I'm sorry, I'm starting to lose my train of thought here a little bit because get a little bit confusing. But so yeah, India had just previously landed a lander on the moon and had publicly come out and, you know, claimed the moon for that the moon belonged to India. And there was all this kind of moon themes running through a lot of things at the time. And I know that one of your frequent guests, Christopher Knowles, wrote about that quite a bit at the time as well. And so there were a number of interesting things going on in the heavens, if you will, with the moon and Sirius at the time, running through the presidential campaign. And I know that he covered a lot of that material at large last time he was on your show and has done just a remarkable job of flushing that material out.
Yes.
As have a number of other people. I mean, that's part of what makes what we're doing, because I really think, you know, it's a collective effort, frankly. Yeah, we all write our individual blogs and we all have kind of our own take on these various topics, but at the same time, we feed off of each other's information greatly. And, you know, not only from us, but also from our readers. Each of us have a following of people that are leaving comments, which I would recommend, you know, any of your listeners that are reading, definitely. I know that everyone really appreciates the comments because obviously the thickness of this material is such that it's impossible for any one person to pick up every little detail as they're happening, because these things are, not only is it thick, but these things are coming out so fast that it's just impossible to keep up with. So it's great to be able to play off of each other's material. Oftentimes we will email each other to provide information to the other people in the community that are writing about this stuff. And so I really view it as a collaborative effort, even though it is a singular blog that I write. The connection that I have with the other people that are writing is crucial, and it's part of what makes this kind of an actual movement to me.
Yeah,
is that there really does seem to be so much interest, not just from people writing about it, but people reading about it and doing their own, you know, taking their own active part, even though they may not feel comfortable starting a blog or anything else. They contribute in so many other ways that it really does feel at times like it's a movement, which
I think it is in a way. I think you're right. And again, it's all about the topics are in the center. And what I like, you know, with it, so to speak, is that it's not as much that this is the wrong way and this is the right way to look at something. It's more about, well, you know, when we talk about it in terms of symbology and symbolism, it's all about the interpretation and what you can contribute to the connectivity between one thing and another. And as you say, I think it becomes kind of a small, what should we call it, an area or a topic can go a little bit viral within this little field of researchers, if you will. A lot of people are picking up on it from day one and then discovering small little tidbits on their own, and when you put together the picture, it becomes like a small, should we call it an intelligence network, if you will, if you know what I mean, almost, which is quite interesting.
Oh, very much so. No doubt about it. And, you know, the viral phenomena, if you will, I guess, that kind of is associated with the internet now, you know, it's a good thing and it's a bad thing. It does have its drawbacks too. You know, there's certainly a lot of room for disinformation and people pushing particular agendas, people inserting information that, you know, may really just be there to muck up the works too. So it's a sticky minefield at times. And that's, you know, that's at some level maybe neither here nor there in the grand scheme of things. I think, you know, for me, as long as the information is getting out there, and if nothing more, it's making people think and be aware of the world around them.
Yes.
On a more minute level, to me, that's really what's important, because it really is ultimately at the end of the day about waking people up.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. I couldn't agree more. It doesn't really matter if it's, you know, if something comes up as, you know, if one thinks or believes that one piece of information is disinformation or not. I think it all goes back to the individual perception of the information. Does this ring true in the larger context of what I've been following myself? And if it does, some would say it's good information, and for another, it would be disinformation. It's very, very tricky, and I think that it also shows that one have to be always savvy, or, you know, take everything with a grain of salt, as it were, and never trust anything, if you know what I mean, at face value. But just, you know, keep sharp and keep passing the information through the right filters, and it will reveal itself either to be something that is truthful or not. And that's the individual thing. That's what I feel about it.
Oh, yeah, I agree with you 100%. So, yeah, the Wolf Moon, what was very interesting in that there was a lot of other wolf-related things. And in some ways, I start to wonder whether or not we could really look at the upcoming year, 2009, almost as potentially the year of the wolf in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting ready to become completely inundated by Hollywood with wolf-based stories, you know, as part of the stories. You know, we had Underworld 3, the movie, come out about that time. They're remaking The Wolfman. Mm-hmm. That's going to be coming out later this year. The sequel to Twilight is going to include werewolves in it. You've got the X-Men Wolverine, who is more or less a wolf-like character. That spinoff movie is coming out this summer. So we're really like it's being pushed on us at some level, whether we consciously are aware of it or not.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, what do you think it means in context of the wolf? Do you think it has to do with the animalistic parts of man coming to the surface, or is this, and that's I guess would be a more kind of psychological interpretation of it? But do you think it's something more mythological or even cryptozoology type thing going on behind there? What do you think?
Well, for me, it was really your first statement. Something tells me that it's pushing for that bringing out our animal or more animal instincts, which is a really scary thought. you know, we already live in a highly violent culture, and unfortunately, I think that it could potentially get more violent because I feel like that there's this atmosphere that's being created to draw that out from us. And one of the things that I touched on just briefly in one of my articles had to do with that, and specifically kind of the storyline that was set up in the third Underworld film that just came out, which is Rise of the Lycans. And basically what's happening in that story is that you have the vampires who are basically represent the bloodline elites at war with the werewolves, who are, within the context of that storyline, a slave race to the vampires.
Yes.
And so I see that kind of the chessboard that we kind of live in currently and kind of always have.
Yes.
And so the, you know, I don't want to speculate about it too much, but at some level, I feel like that there's a trying to draw out that animal side of us, to do kind of their dirty work for them. You know, if we're turning on ourselves and we're becoming more base and more violent with one another, then they can pretty much do as they please. No, if no one's taking their anger out on them, and maybe they're trying to get a little bit of that too. You know, which I don't like looking that direction, but I do feel at some level that that kind of future awaits us at some level.
Yeah, and I guess that could be also interpreted in two ways. One way is that we first need to, well, I've said it on the show before, it's like, you know, whenever these types of things come to the surface, I also see them as a kind of an exorcism, meaning that they actually are drawn out from the shadow aspects of ourselves, meaning that finally, in a way, they become manifest in the world, possibly, and that will help us to either, you know, recognize it and hopefully not then embrace it, or recognize it and toss it to the side and say, hey, you know, let's be done with this and move on, right? So it can be seen from two possible ways. One thing is that it might be a good thing and a little bit bad for a while, so to speak, but would you say that because I know what you mean when you're talking also about the base, you know, level to how people live their lives in a very much more like an animal than a human being. And in that sense, we would be incredibly much more easily controllable, as you were alluding to before, in regards to the elite, or in the context of the vampire elite, the bloodsuckers, that they can, you know, we would be very much more manageable in that sense, right?
Yeah, and you know, what you brought up about kind of facing that darker side of ourselves can certainly be therapeutic, and I certainly hope that would be how we would process this kind of material around us. I certainly hope that's how most people deal with it, but unfortunately, I think we know a little too well that most people are asleep. And if you're taking in this kind of material and you're kind of asleep and you're just kind of seeing it as entertainment, which it is, I'm not saying that it can't not be entertainment, but at the same time, if you're not actively processing
the entertainment,
what's happening on a more subversive or subconscious level, even with this material, that can be dangerous.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, we're being programmed constantly. And if you're not aware of the fact that you're being programmed, then it's going to have an effect on you that you may not fully even realize.
Exactly, yeah.
So in order for us to face those things, which I agree, that would be the best way to process this material as we see it around us, I can only hope that people are doing that actively for themselves and that, you know, they're aware. Again, you know, pretty much everything I do with this stuff is to really just try to make people aware. And, you know, unfortunately, I'm probably preaching to the converted with most of my stuff. Now, there are probably people that stumble across my website doing a Google search for something, whether they sit and actually read it and it has an effect on them or changes the way that they're thinking about something, I don't know.
Well, just to quickly interject, there's new people coming, you know, online to these things, so to speak, all the time. And in many cases, I mean, again, get emails almost every single day from people who discover the work, you know, in some fashion or some form. And again, I think that we also should always keep that in mind in a way that even though it might be for the choir, as to say a little bit, that still is developing the genre, right? Still developing the ideas and giving new energy into it. But it also is very much for all the new people who have never heard about this stuff before, right? They're coming into it for the first time. And in that context, this is great stuff. You know, it's an eye opener. That's for sure. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and that's, you know, one reason why your show is so great, because it does reach far more people, I'm sure, than my work, you know, on a day-to-day level. And so the more people that stumble across it in the same way that I stumbled across your show when I did, the better, certainly. And, you know, it's up to each of us to impart this material or these ideas to the people around us as much as we can, without alienating ourselves from friends and family and people we may come across, because a lot of people don't want to hear this stuff.
That's true. Yeah.
They think it's poppycock and crazy and a million other things. Mm. But that's why we're doing what we're doing, right? I mean,
well, it doesn't matter in that sense what others think about it, in, you know, in that way either, because this is might not be for the majority, at least not at this point in time, but that it's, again, every single thing begins with a small little area, a small little group of people, or even just one individual looking into something and slowly bringing it to the light. And again, what I see as the main, you know, positive thing and the main, you know, wondrous thing about all this stuff that so many people now are doing is this demonstration of the interconnectedness and how everything, and that can come out of either if you only are looking into conspiracy or if you're only looking into the more synchronistic or spiritual aspect to it. I still feel it leads us towards the same idea or goal, that there is conscious action behind seemingly you know, random events, basically, and that's what I see as the positive thing, and I hope that everyone can wake up to that, because I think that will increase the quality of life, as it were.
I agree, and in a lot of ways, regardless of how each individual approaches this material, somewhere down the road, I think it does lead us all to the same place.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully that's going to be a good place.
Yeah.
But you see what I'm saying, that no matter what your take is, as different as everybody's takes are going to be, that ultimately the material and the end result is all taking us to a place where we're all connected at the end. We may not totally be connected now, but at some point we will be somewhere down the road.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important.
Absolutely. I see what you mean, and I agree. And again, it's just something that we can see maybe a hint of, you know, way off in the horizon, as it were. And this is just about, you know, discovering. This is the first in the initial small steps, if you will, of discovering how everything fits together and how the schematics or the properties or even the code of life and existence in a weird kind of way is connected. And, you know, science is doing their part on their end, right? And we're doing some other interesting aspect to this when we're researching the media, news events, things that are happening in the world and names and place and the interconnectedness of these things. And it's very much a part of the same puzzle, if you will, but we might not have the perspective to see all that right now. So I think you're right, absolutely. And if we go back, Todd, quickly again here to the moon aspect and the Sirius aspect, I don't know if there's much more to mention on it. I guess there is. There always is, of course. But this is something that, you've been following, and I think that the motifs of the moon and even, I guess, Sirius is something that you are constantly following up on and keeping in the back of your head, as it were. Is there anything more you can, you know, say about it or want to say about it before we move on and touch upon something else here?
Well, the way this kind of this stuff works for me is that once one of these themes, like I was talking about before, like 2 years ago, I started using the trident to express some of these ideas, and now here it is, like almost 2 years later, and I'm still. That's become even more dominant in my work in a lot of ways. I think probably the same thing is going to hold true with the moon research and the Sirius material.
Mm-hmm.
That these are now becoming like somewhat established signifiers, if you will. We're seeing the moon stuff is still just continuing to go on. You can't not open up a newspaper or read a news article about Barack Obama these days without references to his honeymoon in the White House being over.
Right.
You know, it's little subtle things like that.
Yeah.
Then, you know, the other day, he basically, it was scheduled, but he basically snuck out of the White House. He was having all these troubles with the confirmation of his cabinet posts to an elementary school in Washington, D.C. And he goes and, you know, not unlike Bush's reading of the goat story on the day of 9/11,
mm-hmm.
we find Barack Obama reading a book called Moon Over Star to a group of elementary school students. And he, you know, he's fascinated with the moon. He's fascinated with JFK, who's the man who swore he was going to put us on the moon, you know, and then Abe Lincoln. And, you know, there's all these connections that, you know, he himself seems obsessed with. And then the media becomes even almost more obsessed with it in a way that it feeds into their reporting on him, whether they even fully realize it or not. Like referring to the honeymoon being over,
yeah.
and little things like that, you know, they may not even be conscious that it's just stacking up, you know, all this like material surrounding him just keeps getting stacked up.
Yeah.
And again, Christopher Knowles has really done an amazing job following the stuff around Barack Obama specifically.
Yes.
But that, those couple of things came up like last week or so that I just kept noticing. And I know that Christopher picked up on it just as quickly. And that's another thing with this research is that once one of these stories breaks, there's so many people examining this stuff now that it happens so fast.
Yeah.
It's going to get posted. Somebody's going to start picking up on it almost immediately. So really kind of the best we can do is play off of each other and try to fill the holes and try to keep the, you know, building a foundation of this material. And in a way, you know, when I think about keeping up with all the information as it's coming from us, so many different sources, that, you know, I start to think about things like trying to somehow catalog, or, you know, I try to put a number of links to anyone that's writing about the same topic as I am at one time, and trying to like make sure that if you're reading my article, I give you as many other links as I possibly can to the other people that are writing about it at the exact same time.
Right, right. Yeah.
But then as quickly as these things come, they go quickly too.
Yeah.
You know, that's why a lot of times, like, it's hard for me to even come on and talk about right even now all the stuff that happened in Mumbai, even though I wrote about it. It, because it moves so fast that once you've processed the information and written about it, not to say that it's gone from your consciousness, but you have to move on so quickly to the next thing, excuse me, that, you know, you can start to lose bits and pieces of it. Yes, it's written down on my blog, you know, digitally, but I'd like to see a compendium almost of the information from everybody that's working on it simultaneously. That's something that I think about. Not quite sure how to go about it.
Yeah.
But I think that for us, people that are writing about it and covering it, plus for people that want to be able to find all of it in one place, I think would be a great idea. And that's just kind of things that I kick around.
No, I know what you mean. I think that also the idea that, you know, it is very difficult to keep every single detail on track in your, you know, in your brain, as it were. And an advantage with it now is that you can keep, like you're doing, and what really actually a blog is, it is like an online journal, right, where we can make those types of notes, put down the basic and most important details that one can find, and then there will be up there for people to search and discover and continue their research for themselves. And I think that is the best way of go about it, because really on one level, to carry around all those details would be on one level kind of you know, useless information in a way. It's just enough with the fact that you know what has happened, you know the basic story, the basic outline of something, and can quickly drag that up when something similar happens, right? Okay, you know, this resonates
right
with that over there, so let me go back and check the details on that and to verify and see what, you know, how these correlate in a way. And I
right
think that that's a natural process, actually.
Yeah, and that's how this form of writing or research really works.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, something will click, you know, reading some oftentimes fairly ambiguous news story, and you come across something and you go, wait a minute, I came across that, or something that refers to that or symbolizes that somewhere else, you know, in the recent past.
Mm-hmm.
And quickly, when you make that connection, then it opens the doors usually to three or four other things.
Absolutely.
That,
yeah,
that end up making that event or that story that much more symbolic.
Yeah. Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. And I think that's also the nature of how the, as you say, the research is being done. It needs to be, you know, filtered through all the previous information, you know, and in that sense, and again, that's why I think it's very much an intuitive process. Actually, it's more about you recall something. It's something in the information, the article, whatever, that seems to resonate with you, and that is what you probably pick up on, and then just, you know, go into the details of it, and then you'll discover it. There it is, you know.
It's fascinating, you know. It certainly can become addictive too, because, you know, like I said, it's like opening up a big can of worms. Mm-hmm. When you start to look, the connections that are there are staggering, you know. And really, you know, at some level, that is probably just showing us how we are all connected.
Yeah.
I think at some level that is what it's telling us, but at other levels, I think it's also telling us other things as well.
Let's see here. We have about 10 minutes or so left, and I'd like to ask you a little bit on where you'd like to go in the last portion of our program. We could either maybe talk a little bit more about you mentioned in the first segment that you had a personal kind of UFO experience. Either we can talk a little bit about that if you're up for it, or we can possibly move on and talk about the Dark Knight, the Joker theme that I know that you've been, as with many else as well, have been following very closely. So there's a number of ways where we can go here. What would you like to talk about here in the last portion, Todd?
Well, as much as my past experience is interesting to me, it's nothing significant enough to bother your listeners with, I don't think. I think, yeah, we can certainly discuss the Dark Knight situation. I mean, that story just continues on and on and on. Mm-hmm. And it's an amazing one. That you could do multiple shows
on that alone.
just on that one topic.
Give us just a brief a background from your perspective of what you found fascinating and how it began for you, and we can see where we end up with that.
Well, let's see. You know, I mean, I guess obviously with Heath Ledger's passing, that just triggered, you know, a bunch of people to start looking at what may have happened there. You know, I don't think that anyone really wanted to believe that he killed himself or, you know, would take his own life. He, you know, a young, very popular actor. But there was just so much information swirling in relation to his role as the Joker that I don't think anybody could just look at it on the surface level. And so then we saw these really savage kind of like knife attacks that were starting to take place. And then we saw people that had connections to the Joker and that character that were directly involved with a lot of these just like brutal acts of violence, which, you know, just stunning when you started looking at how closely connected the Joker character was to these people and to these events. Even beyond just the Joker in and of itself, you know, yesterday, Valentine's Day, was the 1 year anniversary of the killings at Northern Illinois University.
Yeah.
And that particular situation wasn't a Joker situation specifically, but that particular individual was fascinated with the character from the Saw movies.
Yes.
And was even had a tattoo. I guess the character's name is Jigsaw.
Mm-hmm.
And so we saw a similar situation with the victim of the Canadian Greyhound bus decapitation that took place. The victim in that particular instance had kind of Joker tattoos and was actually referred to as the Joker by his friends, and just all these things on and on. Then, you know, we just had this situation in Belgium with the nursery killings.
Yeah.
And the individual in that instance supposedly showed up, painted up to look like the Joker.
Hmm.
And went so far as to indirectly kind of reference a line from the Dark Knight movie. But the, you know, in the press releases, you know, the press stories that were coming out immediately as it was happening, you know, that the press even went to great length to make the connection themselves to the Joker. Mm-hmm. And to the Dark Knight movies. So, you know, we weren't really seeing those connections made by the mainstream media with some of these earlier events that were that researchers like myself find to be connected to Heath Ledger and to the Dark Knight. But what we saw there was that in some ways, like now the mass media were starting to make similar, almost synchronistic connections in you know, mainstream media coverage, which I found pretty interesting.
Well, isn't that interesting? It's almost as if the, you know, the work of pointing these things out actually kind of infuse the, you know, the whole society with the same basic idea. And really, if you think about it, in many cases, as you said before, the connections there are so obvious, so it's almost like, duh, you know, how can you avoid not to go there in a way, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But to see it actually taking place that way is something altogether different, really, because I, you know, I don't expect to see reporting like that. But it, you know, I'm definitely not suggesting that researchers like myself or anyone else are influencing mainstream reporting.
But it will be
interesting to see if mainstream reporting starts to take on more of the qualities of some of the ways that that we're approaching writing about these subjects.
Well, I mean, if they are, let's take that into account, if they are observing the what has been referred to as the blog sphere, I guess, you know, if there's a lot of people writing about it, and you're a journalist and you go online to check what you can find, or you do specific searches, let's say on just blogs or WordPress or what have you, then they might absolutely pick up on that and find, you know, connections and write about it themselves. You know, we're not sure the way many of the journalists, how they approach a subject, or if they are even allowed to go off on a tangent like that. But I definitely think that on a more subtle level, the influence takes place anyway. But that's another story. We don't have to go there now. But
right.
You never know.
Well, I, you know, one of the, I guess, I guess, in some ways to enlighten the listeners if they're not even familiar, like one of the things that the media had picked up on, with the case in Belgium was the fact that, the kid who perpetrated this crime, his last name is De Gelder. And they picked up on the fact that his last name, Gelder, is an anagram for ledger, which reconnects him, not only with the fact that he was supposedly had painted himself up to look like the Joker, you know, his name is an anagram for Heath Ledger, which, you know, ties it all completely back. And when you look at these cases, and that there have been a number of them, if you look at some of my work and some of Lauren Coleman's work, you know, these aren't the only ones. There are even some smaller ones, but they all have these kind of signature things like that that connect them in some form or fashion. They are connected through these little signifiers, signatures, if you will.
That's really interesting. It reminds me, as you say, I mean, you reference Lawrence Coleman again, and could it be that this is the copycat effect that he's been writing about, that we're witnessing in that sense, that when the media begins to highlight these types of events, it kind of spreads in a kind of viral way again, to use that word. And you know, kids for whatever reason are in some way or fashion reacting to this or playing out this event over and over again. What do you think?
There's definitely something to that. Lauren has, you know, literally written a book on that.
Yes.
I don't think that there's any denying that. You know, I don't – obviously, the mainstream media doesn't really necessarily want to identify themselves with helping that along, or, you know, I don't want to say encouraging, but that
– yeah, they don't want to recognize that they have a responsibility in a way.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And so, you know, that's really kind of – the crux of what he's doing is, you know, trying to get the media to realize that. Of course, that's probably never likely going to happen. They're certainly not going to take responsibility for any of it. And at some level, nor should they. I mean, we as human beings have to be responsible for our own actions. But, you know, in a number of these cases, and this particular case in question as well, you know, on the conspiratorial end of things, you know, we have to look at things like mind control and think about it in terms of that as well, because, you know, this particular kid has no recollection of the event itself. He remembers everything prior to that and immediately after that, but has no memory of the of what he actually did.
Isn't that interesting?
And, you know, not all cases are like that. And so, you know, when you start thinking about it in terms of mind control and that, you know, it requires a trigger to set the person off to do whatever it is, you know, you do have to look at things like the media and these movies. You know, are these movies acting as triggers? You know, that's something that I haven't really written about specifically, but I do kind of allude to a lot of times that, you know, is that what's happening? Is something like The Dark Knight, which, you know, a lot of people have a really bad feeling, either when they're watching that movie or after they finish watching that movie. And is that bad feeling something deeper embedded in the movie that they may be picking up on, i.e. like some sort of, you know, subconscious trigger that's embedded in the film itself? I mean, that's pure speculation on my part, certainly, and that's on the real far end, probably, of conspiracy research. But it is something I find interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it needs to be considered in whatever shape or form it actually is playing out. I mean, again, we could be talking about a hands-on, interference, as it were, in the film process, or even part of the entire film process itself, to do these types of things, either as a freaking experiment or what have you, or it could just be the other level to all this is that, in some kind of, you know, weird way, the people who are involved in the film work are in some way subconsciously releasing this into the movie, and this is something that is, you know, the people out there that are watching this, that are being so-called entertained by this, are reacting to it in a horrible way, and they, this is an unfortunate outcome of that. There's just so much more to say about that, of course, why that would be and the psychology behind many of the kids that are doing it. But again, it's very interesting that many, I know these kids that are involved, they have either there are or have been on some kind of antidepressants in many cases. There's a psychological, a past with psychological, you know, disturbances, as it were, or they've been involved here and there, you know, with different, they've been problem kids, so to speak, at school. And you know, we don't know at this point if they are being used to spread, you know, spread violence and fear throughout society. And again, I mean, Virginia Tech, we have, Columbine, there's, you know, numerous examples to be mentioned. We had in Finland a while back, you know, it's like, it seemed to be across the board. And that's why it's interesting to pay attention to it, you know, and why is this happening? And no one seems to, again, look at the deeper aspects to it, or the possible, you know, occult aspects to all of this stuff.
And the occult footprint, if you will, is on a lot of these things. Ben Fairhall is a writer that I think does a really good job dealing with the kind of occult side of a lot of these kind of cases that we see happening. I guess that's really all I have to say about it. I can go on and on about how fascinating it is.
yes. Well, I mean, I,
you know,
yeah, go ahead.
The ramifications, unfortunately, of these kind of events are much broader. You know, laws get passed that take away a lot of our civil liberties because of these cases. And, you know, in some ways, rightfully so, because people get scared and they want to, but unfortunately, a lot of people want guarantees that things like this aren't going to happen.
Right.
Well, that's ridiculous.
It is.
First of all.
Yeah.
And to ask governments to protect us all, like, for things that are just going to happen a lot of times, you know, like you were saying, you know, it does at some level become a chicken or the egg kind of story with a lot of these perpetrators.
Yeah.
It's like, they were on, you know, heavy pharmaceuticals. They had, you know, the same kind of childhood problems that a lot of people have. They had psychiatric problems, you know. So it becomes a big murky mess when you try to, like, really unravel what possesses someone to do something like that. But it ultimately, what we're seeing as these types of situations increase, and they definitely, in my mind, have increased.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dramatically. certainly since Columbine. But we're giving away our civil liberties every time one of these things happens. You know, laws get passed that we don't even end up paying attention to as a result of these things. And that becomes the bigger, darker picture that, you know, disturbs me. Yes, these situations, you know, I write about them. I try not to make light of them. But I do feel like they're important to look at, as morbid as they may seem. You know, they are important and they're having a huge impact on all of our lives, whether we realize it or not.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And again, it helps contribute to the whole idea, the overall picture, that the idea that everyone is you know, afraid, because again, the mantra in a way that is disputed throughout these types of events is that, you know, we never saw it coming. This just happened out of the blue. It can happen to like anyone at any particular point in time, and everyone should be afraid. And then the consequence of that is, as you said, Todd, you know, that is to, you know, bring in the metal detectors in the school campuses and you know, search the kids for, you know, for guns. And again, the environment of suspicion all the time is something that is on the rise, and it just creates this weird, you know, disconnection from, you know, living your life and you know, doing your thing, and but then, you know, you should walk around and be scared all the time because of this stuff. So it's something very weird with it, and it's something that kind of, if you'd ask me, it stinks. You know, it smells of something fishy going on here. You know, I don't like it.
You're absolutely right, Henrik. I mean, I feel the exact same way. You know, people to me in general are, most people are good people. And there's no reason now or ever to have to, or should we, go around paranoid and afraid of people around us. But that's what it's coming to. You know, there is this Orwellian nightmare that we're quickly finding ourselves being a part of.
Yeah.
And that is terribly unfortunate. I mean, we don't need to be afraid. And, you know, part of the reason that I guess in some ways that I look at kind of some of the uglier stories that are out there is to demystify them at some level. Maybe for myself and maybe for others, you know, to show it for what it is, as ugly as it may be, but we can't be afraid of it. You know, things are going to happen regardless.
Yeah.
You know, light, there are no certainties in life, and there are no guarantees just because you pass a bunch of oppressive laws that, you know, people aren't going to go out and do crazy things. I mean, that's going to happen.
Yeah. Especially.
But we can't give in to the fear that ends up resulting from these things.
Yeah.
To give away everything to where we live in an Orwellian state.
And I think that the opposite will actually happen. The effect or the how should I put it? The more a society oppresses its people, the more these types of events actually will take place. People will freak out eventually in the system like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's true, and that people that are thinking that this is good and passing these laws can't see that baffles me sometimes. You know, that they really think that that's gonna make it all better. No, it's gonna make it worse. We're seeing it make it worse. People are starting to feel like caged animals. You know, back to the whole wolf metaphor, you know?
Well, there you go.
And what do caged animals do when they feel like they're, you know, being threatened?
Yeah,
they strike out.
A cornered animal, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I think, Todd, that's a good a place to round things off. Although, again, as we said, there's so much more to say about it. That's something that we definitely can return to perhaps in a future program and bring it back and talk more about it then. Because, again, as you said, this is just slowly kind of unraveling itself, and it's something that is continuing all the time. It's a continuous process, and I'd like to round things up here with you giving out your website address, of course, again, and mentioning a little bit more about your blog if you want to. But from that point, I want to say thank you for coming on, Todd Campbell. It's been really nice having you here. I've really enjoyed the discussion, and as I said, we'd love to have you back at some point and talk more about all of this.
Henrik, that would be fantastic, and I've greatly enjoyed being here with you and just being able to talk about this stuff. That's what we do, I guess. And so anytime you want to have me, you just let me know and I'll be here. The site is Through the Looking Glass, and it's www.peeringthrough.blogspot.com. And I'm working on right now probably a little bit of a larger article than I would normally write, that hopefully will be out in the next week or so. And it's basically kind of envelops like the Trident stuff and 9/11 and Mumbai, but it's really tying it all together, and it's going to be basically about the concept of Trinity. It's going to be kind of the crux of it. So anybody out there that wants to check in on that, I should hopefully have that up soon. And as always, I will try to stay on top of all this other stuff as well as it comes along. And there's so many other great writers out there, too, that are doing so much great work. And they're all linked at my site and your site as well. And I just, thanks for having me on.
Definitely. Thanks, Todd. Great having you. And again, the website is peeringthrough.blogspot.com. Thank you very much for listening. Until next time, take good care, everyone, and we'll talk more soon. Bye-bye. I also want to mention that everyone out there who are making your own music would like to hear it, and we are interested in playing it on Red Ice Radio. So go to our radio archive, click on Bumper Music at the top, and read more about all the details how to send us your music. We'll be back this coming Thursday with Ben Singleton from Pseudo Occult Media. Join us then. In the meantime, we'll see you online.